KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning, Julie.
We're excited to have another very special guest with us today, and as always, I'll let you make the introductions.
Well, thank you. This time of the year, it's nice and sunny outside, and everybody's enjoying the great weather. And one of the fantastic sports that we have here at Fresno State that people can go outside and enjoy is equestrian. And we're very fortunate to have our new head coach for the equestrian team, Eric Hubbard, join us this morning. Thank you, Coach Hubbard.
Thank you, Mary. I'm glad to be here.
So nice to meet you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Well, you have had a very exciting season, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, I wanted to talk to you about your childhood and what went into the making of a great equestrian coach. And I think your story is great because you have a wide range of interests, but you always had the passion for horses. And that started with you being born in southeast Idaho in a town called Grace.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Grace. What kind of a town was it? And did it have any similarities to Fresno?
There's quite a few actually similarities in the fact that the biggest is it's very agriculture based.
Good.
Growing up, we actually would get a week out of school in the fall to go work in the potatoes. It was called potato harvest. We wouldn't actually have spring break in the spring. Uh-huh. We'd have potato harvest in the fall because we go work in the potatoes and then in the fields harvesting all the potatoes. All the potatoes that we raised in our local area went to commercial potatoes. They became seed potatoes. So, for example, when you would go to Orida, those were the seeds that made those potatoes.
So your family actually participated in it, you and your siblings?
My siblings did. My dad was a hay grower and a hay farmer.
Mm-hmm.
So that time of year was a little slow for us. So we would go work in potatoes as we would hit that time of year.
That's really interesting.
I love the phrase work in potatoes.
Work in the potatoes.
That's something I've not heard before.
Yeah, me either.
Well, we would do like spring break chop cotton and that type of thing, but potatoes. So your parents are Libby and Alma, and you have two siblings. So tell us where you are in the birth order.
I'm the oldest of three.
Okay.
My sister's in the middle. My brother is the youngest of us.
Are they also interested in horses or animals?
All of us have had interest in horses. My sister and I both grew up in the 4-H program showing horses, and we also showed outside in different competitions and whatnot. And my brother was always drug along to the horse shows. So horse shows weren't a lot of fun for him when we were showing.
Uh-huh.
And so he actually had a hog. He participated in swine 4-H and grew up raising market hogs and did that. And he would ride a little bit. Now as an adult, he goes back and rides with my dad more now than he did as a kid. So the horse show thing wasn't his thing, but just general riding and stuff with the horses he's come around to. My sister's slipped away from it a little bit. She's raising her family and things like that. But all of us have had a passion for animals of some sort.
So you said your dad used to grow hay. How many horses did you have, or were you surrounded by ranches that did have horses?
Yeah, I think the most we ever had was about 10 horses, and that was actually quite a few for our family.
That sounds like a lot to me.
Yeah. But in general, we'd always have 5 horses usually around, you know, and our horses, as much as we like to go and show, actually during the week when we weren't showing on the weekends from time to time, they were moving the cows in the summer because we also had cattle too.
Oh, so they were working.
Yeah. So they had dual jobs compared to just being more of a recreation show horse. We would go move the cows from meadow to meadow when they were out in the summer or in the winter. We were calving out the calves. So during that time, we would doctor the calves if we need to, and the things that we would do when they were first born to, you know, their vaccinations, things like that, we used the horses for. So
you had the full cycle of the farm, you know. Tell me a little bit about your experience in high school. I see that you played basketball and baseball, so you were very into athletics, but you also were involved in theater and choir and band. And how did you have enough hours in the day to cover everything?
Well, it was kind of interesting. I went to a really small school. At the time, there was only 250 in the student population.
Okay.
I graduated with about 55 other students. So it was fairly small. So we were all active doing a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the trimester system. And actually, my senior year, my last trimester, I had 30 excused absences from all the different events I did.
Oh, wow.
My econ teacher introduced me one day as a new student because I hadn't been there. But I've always been very active and involved, you know, from different things. And looking back, I really cherish a lot of those things because it made me more of a well-rounded person, I believe. Mm-hmm. I still have some faults as we all try to work through. It just helped me through all those different things, be able to be in the theater, to the choir, to, you know, we were a number of different things that just, I think, helped me grow individually as a person, even though we were part of a group.
And doing those group activities leads well to becoming a coach because you learned exactly what teamwork was from a young age and how important it is for people to learn how to work together and to have a common goal.
Mm-hmm. That was a huge part of it. I also grew up, was very active in 4-H. My mm-hmm. brother did the swines and my sister and I did the horses. Mm-hmm. And we became in their system. They have a teen leader to work with the 4-H leaders to, you know, one day you might run the whole 4-H meeting that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it allowed you to grow. And I was lucky enough to have some very good 4-H leaders that helped me kind of be a part of a leadership team, but then also would help the team as a goal, you know, everybody to be as successful as they can be by the end of the year, your project in that sense, along with all the other school activities. So I was really lucky to have those people influencing my life early on.
It sounds like you had a lot of positive role models growing up. So what was the attitude in your family about furthering your education?
It wasn't an option not to further your education in our household.
Good.
My mom is an educator. Mm-hmm. And so she believes hard and fast that that's something that everybody should have in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when it was my time to look into universities and when I was in high school and thinking my next step, you know, a lot of us kind of don't have a plan, but I kind of wanted to go to a big school that had a big equine science program. And my mom kind of sat me down and said, well, what happens if something happens and you can't ride horses and train horses? Mm-hmm. You need to think of another option. And so we were looking into different things, and I stayed local, pretty close to home, about 3 hours away at the College of Southern Idaho. And mm-hmm. I ended up there with my liberal arts degree, but I had classes with speech pathology, equine studies, and deaf studies. So kind of had a little bit of everything that threw together things. But I'm really thankful that my mom had encouraged me and pushed me to further my education and make sure that that was a part of my life and how that has helped me through time.
And you finished your degree in educational sign language studies.
Mm-hmm.
But as you were doing that, you still kept very active in the horse world, I guess is one way of putting it.
Yes.
And you were earning trophies and showing. And tell us a little bit about the type of dedication that you need to have to be a successful equestrian.
There's so much that goes into every sport. And mm-hmm. this, again, isn't different than any other sport. There's hours of actually training, mm-hmm. riding that you would put into that. But with the equestrian, there's also another factor that comes into play, and that's our equine athlete, our horse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up early in the morning, caring for them, making sure they're fed in the evening when you're done, that whole schedule, and keeping them fit and having them be a healthy athlete as well. And sometimes mm-hmm. they hit certain bumps in the roads that, just like we do, an injury or something that you then have to manage and maintain and, you know, help them heal.
And you have to be able to detect it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're working with a veterinarian, you're working with a farrier or the person that puts the shoes on, and mm-hmm. is something incorrect and we have to change and things like that, that sometimes just as general public kind of go, oh, that's pretty horse, but they don't see what happens kind of behind behind closed doors, if you will.
All the background that goes into it.
Yeah.
Which is something I respect about our team, you know, how dedicated they are, and that in addition to all of the work that they put into the horses and into perfecting their techniques, that they're great students and that they also volunteer. I've seen that they go out and do things for the children's hospital or collect items. And, you know, they're just such well-rounded young women. And every time I've interacted with them, I've just been so proud of them. And I'm a big supporter of the program, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really know much about it. And the way I came about it was I had seen that there was going to be a competition on the campus. And I went over to the area where I thought it was supposed to be. And there wasn't anybody there except for one athlete on her horse. And I asked her about it, and she said, oh, no, it's going to be tomorrow. But that was the best mistake I made, because she spent about half an hour talking to me, telling me a little bit about it. And then I went back the next day, and I watched the competition. And from there on, I just wanted to learn more and more about it. And I think that, you know, as I've been sharing it with other people, the interest is there. But there isn't much that people know about the actual competition. A misconception is that you take the horses with you everywhere you go.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us about one of the challenges that the athletes face when they travel to another area to compete?
Yeah. So when we travel, we actually show the host school's horses. So we don't ever travel with horses. So when you compete at home, you have a large home advantage, more than what you usually would in a general sport. But this is huge because we know our animals, we ride them on a day-to-day basis. So when we travel, they know them inside and out. They practice on them day-to-day. So it's a disadvantage when you travel away.
So the athlete really has to have a keen sense of knowing horses in general to be able to get on a strange horse. And how much time do they get before they have to ride to get to know that horse or take it through some paces?
When we compete, we have a 4-minute warm-up. And then they go. Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
Whoa.
Oh, my goodness. I thought it was 15. So yeah. That's even... Wow.
Yeah. So the competitive rider gets on and they have 4 minutes to basically become a team with that horse.
Yes.
And we get to see the other school warm up the horse and they take them through some paces and things that we would see with that are required by us. And so they generally get a feel. Okay. This one may be a little bit nervous. This one looks to be a solid Johnny guy that we can just go and work on. But then sometimes when the riders get on them and they get done their 4 minutes and we talk through kind of a plan in that 4 minutes. So this is what the things that you need to see, how do the horse react to you?
Mm-hmm.
And when you're asking them to do different maneuvers and we have that plan. And then sometimes we walk out and we go, my plan did not work.
It didn't work.
Not one bit. And it's okay. Try to revamp while you're kind of sitting, waiting for your term to compete.
You're just
is the plan like, I'd like another horse or this is what I need to do with this horse?
It's all random draw. So it's randomly drawn. You get to compete on Stormy here.
And you don't get to choose.
No, you don't get to choose.
Stormy could decide Stormy's having a bad day. And
yes.
That's just
and
it.
I think when you find out the horse's name is Stormy, that's kind of a heads up there.
Yeah, Stormy's my example horse. Stormy gets to be everywhere I go. But if Stormy decides to have a bad hair day and he says he's not playing, there's a process that we go through as coaches and we work with the steward who's at the horse show that sees the horses and say, okay, Stormy's not going to play today and he's going to be put potentially someone in an unsafe situation.
Right. You don't
Let's
want
look,
anyone getting
I
hurt.
Would request a new horse. And that's when then there's a process that they go through and we as coaches to work through that. But sometimes it's just like people, sometimes you meet someone and you have this great connection right off the bat.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you just go, I don't get this person. I don't know where they're coming from. And it's the same way with horses.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get on them and sometimes after your 4 minute, the girls go, I love it. Can we take it home? And everyone's like, aww. And then there's times they're like, oh, I
just got to make it.
Stormy gets to stay here.
Right. So there are two types of competition. One is Western. The other one is hunter seat.
Uh-huh.
So which one did you ride in when you performed?
Most of my success has been in the Western events. And so within that, we have the horsemanship and reining. But I also do ride the hunter seat. On and off with that, I've shown that some, and I'm comfortable. It's not my cup of tea. That's where I put all the emphasis on my assistant hunt seat coach, and she does all that. But we are able to still have some conversations about different things. But I grew up riding a lot more Western.
I love to watch the reining, and I love the posture of the athletes when they're going through the paces. It's just very dignified, and it's just beautiful
it's
to
really
watch
beautiful
them do
to watch.
It. But I told you one of the challenges that I have is when I'm watching that they have both competitions going on at the same time next to each other, and I can't focus. But you said that that's done in the consideration of time because it would end up being 6 hours instead of 2 hours.
Yeah. At Fresno State, we've chosen to run our Western event and hunt seat events side by side arena.
Mm-hmm.
And it does get a little tough for our spectators or our fans because there's so much action sometimes. You want to watch the jumping arena and all of that. But on the other side, they're going through the paces and the presence of the young ladies. And they're like, wow, you don't know which way to watch.
Uh-huh.
But we also want to keep it a short afternoon. You can come and enjoy time being there and experience kind of all of it at the same time rather than just being a long, long drawn out day that just...
Right.
Kind of at the end of the day, you're watching paint dry. But when you're doing this in the middle, you're able to just go boom, 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 back and forth. And so that's kind of our goal, and it's to expose people because sometimes they may just want to come see the hunter seat side. Well, they go, oh, wait, look over there. There's things going on that's kind of exciting and learn more about the Western events.
That's good. That's really good. So when you are recruiting athletes, do they already have one type of riding they do or another? Or do you look at an athlete and say, you know, you have these great skills, but maybe you should transition to a different type of competition? How does that work between you and the athlete?
When we're recruiting, we're looking for that rider that's been in their event for a number of years and successful.
Okay.
We do have some riders, especially in the Western. It's not as easy to cross over in the Western. You have to have some experience in the reining you have to have a little bit of grit. Mm-hmm. You got to be able to kind of what we call a cowboy up, cowgirl mm-hmm. up, and do those rundowns and sliding
you have to be
stops. Yeah. And then, but then you also have to have some grit for the horsemanship, but it's a different, that presence and that position is different mm-hmm. between the two. And we have had young ladies and riders that have crossed over. It's a much easier blend between equitation on the flat and equitation over fences on the hunt seat side.
Okay.
Those bases follow each other. And really at the end of the day, we like to say when we're coaching that the equitation over fences is equitation on the flat with speed bumps. Bigger ones. Because if you don't have that foundation of mm-hmm. being able to ride on all those pieces, you can't jump well.
It's going to be
and
hard.
The horse doesn't mm-hmm. go well. So we look for those riders that have those skills and have worked through all of those pieces as they're through their riding education, if you will, mm-hmm. to be confident and be able to step into the ring and ride those horses in 4 minutes and go.
Tell us about some of the outstanding moments that you had this season. You had such a great season this year where you ended up being fifth in the country. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And then you've had a couple All-Americans. So tell us what stood out to you this season.
Wow, there are so many moments this year that are there and stand out. But, mm-hmm. you know, looking at our two All-Americans, Taylor Brown, she was All-American in the horsemanship this year. Last year, she was first team All-American in the mm-hmm. reining. And that just shows Taylor's talent
mm-hmm.
of being able to really adjust those horses. And she's a very hard worker. But one of the great things is Rachel Williams is an All-American this year, and she's a freshman.
Oh, wonderful.
And so she has come in. She actually was voted by our team the Rookie of the Year. She's making the most impact for the team.
Good deal.
She was our United Equestrian Horsemanship Rider of the Year. And so that speaks to her talent and what she has and all of her hard work. So those two are, you know, individually as far as our team riders have been huge. And we've had Riders of the Month, Randy Palmer, Kirsten McKillop, Taylor Dixon. I mean, we've had a number of those people that have had those honors throughout the year, which is just exciting as well to have that recognition when they have a really strong month.
Mm-hmm.
But the team this year has just been gritty. I mean, to put it the least, they hit a really rough patch in the middle of the year
mm-hmm.
and they went to work. They came back and learned from that
Good.
And how to become better. Mm-hmm. And after that, we dropped one competition the rest of the year until we went to nationals. And so that just to them, that's just huge, huge.
They seem like a very close-knit team, that they really stand up for each other and find ways to encourage each other. And, you know, that comes from a coach that lets them know that that's an important quality. So how important and how close is your relationship with the team as a whole? And how much time do you get to spend with them during the week? What type of paces are they taken through?
You know, I think one of the biggest things that actually has drawn our team together even more is they're there 4 days a week at 7 a.m. taking care of our horses.
Oh, my goodness.
And when someone is sick or someone has, they're not there for that morning,
mm-hmm.
the rest of them pick up and help each other. And we're in the barn. I mean, I unfortunately get to be in the barn as much as I'd like to because mm-hmm. I love the horses, but there's the other part of the job that comes into
yes.
play. But that's where those young ladies really build a lot of bond. And in the practices, and we're working through because all of them at one day during their season have had a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes they rely on coaches, you know, like, okay, I'm going to work this. And sometimes they rely on their teammates
mm-hmm.
to get over that. You know, we understand you're having a bad day today. And, you know, it just takes one teammate to say, you know what? I went through that.
Mm-hmm.
I went through that stage. And to be able to have that with each other is huge. And I think that's what really ties them in. And then the other thing is, a lot of them, because we are on campus, which is different from a lot of other competing schools,
mm-hmm.
they come to the barn and we'll spend their 2-hour break at the barn. You know, mm-hmm. we have our Wi-Fi in
but
our
they
area.
Like to be there even when they're hanging
and
out.
And they're there. So they come there and hang out.
That's
they
a great
pull
sign.
Up their computers and they're on whatever social media they have. And
but
working,
they're together.
But they're there together. And so, mm-hmm. you know, and we always kind of talk about not everybody is best friends, but everyone on the team are friends.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really supportive. And at the horse shows, they're at the back gate. They're cheering each other on. They're helping each other out. And you know what? I competed on that horse the last time we were here. This is what I found that worked.
Mm-hmm.
So just helping each other out every day is just, it's huge.
Let's talk a little bit about injuries. What type of support does an equestrian athlete receive when they get injured? I know that you have on-site medical personnel that are there that mm-hmm. can immediately react to anything that would happen. What is the follow-up then if they have a knee injury or, mm-hmm. you know, what's the most common thing that happens for an equestrian athlete?
Lately, it's been hip issues.
Hips, okay.
And just because I think you're straddling a horse and you're mm-hmm. riding and we squeeze and ride and hold legs to make our horses do different maneuvers. And
mm-hmm.
we've actually, in the last 2 years, three young ladies have had a hip surgery. And so that's one of our big ones. And then there's, you know, we as equestrians, sometimes we're growing up, you fall off, you're told to get back on and go again, you know. So that's kind of our mentality. But as athletes, a little bit different. We're so lucky to have our sports medicine team to help us. I mean, they have been outstanding. And so when someone has any type of injury, my pinky hurts for some reason, they go in and they get that support. And I know of a couple of our young ladies that go almost two or three times a week with related issues to riding. Their back has been bothering them. So they go and they do STEM, which is an electrical shock thing that makes your muscles bounce and things like that. But it improves them.
Right.
And they get them, you know, we keep thinking about it. Our ideas get you back on the field. And the support there is so wonderful. And I know that on those young ladies that had the hip surgeries, like someone from the sports medicine team went to the hospital, there at surgery, helped them go through all those steps and, you know, worked with the doctors, what prescriptions, how the schedule for those prescriptions be administered to help them with the student athletes so they can be better. And then all the rehab after.
Is your roster to where you have to use every athlete at every competition, or do you choose three or four? How does that work with if you have someone who's injured? How do you compensate for that?
We're lucky enough that we've got a pretty what we call strong bench, if you will, because we compete either four or five riders per event, and there's four events. So max we would take is 20, and then we also take an alternate with us on the road in case maybe an injury happens on the road, or someone gets food poisoning or sick or something like that. We all know that kind of sometimes happen with travel. So we maximally would travel with this 24, but about 20 compete, depends on if it's four or five. You know, if that does happen, we then kind of look into our bench, if we will, to fill in those positions.
So is it right to assume that the most expensive part for you with competing with most of your competitions back east is traveling?
It's huge. That's the biggest part of our budget. We're the only team in the West that competes within our NCEA format.
Wow.
The closest is South Dakota State or New Mexico State.
Wow.
Yes.
And so it's a lot of travel. And sometimes going back east with the time change and horse show starts at 8 o'clock, you've been there since 6, that's 3 o'clock California time. So that can be a big adjustment for the team when we travel.
And I think that, you know, you also have to take that into consideration when you think our athletes are almost always competing on other horses. So for them to be fifth, you know, if they were able to compete at home all the time on their own horses, it just shows they're incredibly talented.
Yes.
And to be able to handle all that traveling, plus keep their schoolwork up and be able to be so successful, it just amazes me.
That's bringing a lot of stuff together.
Really a lot. And I, with prospective student athletes, I tell them that it's about a 20-hour commitment on top of your schoolwork and classes that just goes into all of that. And I'm very proud of our young ladies because 88% of our team was honored at one of the men's basketball games for being scholar student athletes.
Oh, that's
you know,
great.
They are bright young ladies that work very hard.
They obviously love what they do.
Very much so.
So what vision do you have for the program? What do you think needs to happen in our equestrian program to take it to a higher level?
You know, it's been a process that since I've been a part of that, we're moving forward to that. And I would love to be in the top five every year all the time. And that's our goal. Now, I think that goal is going to be dependent year per year on our student athletes, where we're at, like working through strengths and weaknesses. I really love our support that we're getting in our community and would love to see more. And that's one of kind of my goal is just exposing it. Because so often, even we were on these travel trips and we're in the Fresno airport here, people go, I didn't even know there was an equestrian team.
Right.
And, you know, and they see equestrian, somehow they go, you swim? Or we have our cowboy hat cans and we always get questions, are they drums? And some of the girls have, you know, they'll find someone that's kind of, they can, has a lot of fun to personality, go, oh, it's a racing snapping turtles. And you get these really looks like, no, it's our cowboy hat. So it sometimes is fun with it for people in the airport when we get talking about some of that, but just the exposure in our area.
So what are some of the ways that the public can support the program then, that we can get the word out and and that people can help to make the program more well-known and to support the athletes, just to be there for them and watch them compete?
Yeah, the easiest way is to go to Go Bulldogs and check out our schedule and see us there. We have social media. We have Twitter. We have Instagram and we have Facebook. Facebook, we're always posting different events that we're doing, either it be our Year of the End Banquet or where are we volunteering for the weekend and what's happening in our events, even when we're traveling or we're at home. So those are great outlets to go to be able to find out those information and just see the general. And from there, we can don't hesitate to say hello to us. You know, and we're at the horse shows as coaches and we get busy, but love to have a little discussion with anybody that'd be interested in talking more about it.
Oh, great. Thank you for agreeing to be here and to talk about your passion. And we feel very lucky to have you as our head coach. I'm excited to see what's going to happen next year. And how many new athletes do you have coming onto the team this fall?
We'll have 10 new athletes this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
You are going to be very busy. I'm glad we got you here now because we're not going to be able to talk to you in the fall.
We'd make time if for sure to come. We'd love to have your support.
Well, thank you again for being our guest today. And we're so excited to have you as our Fresno State head coach for equestrian and on the Fresno State team.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for taking time out of your Sunday. It's so nice to meet you.
Thank you.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, Eric Hubbard, Fresno State's equestrian head coach. And of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning, and please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus. Every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.